So do you want to share with us a little bit about what are you most excited about today as it relates to our industry?
So I think the fact that despite the many people who keep saying that email's not going to survive, it keeps going and going and going. And I just quietly smile when people look at me and say, email, isn't that dying? And I'm going like, I'm not seeing it.
You're listening to Real Marketing Real Fast, the only podcast that brings you unfiltered, undaunted, insider information on the latest tools and technologies for online marketers. Prepare to dive deep into marketing myths, breakthrough models, and cutting-edge strategies that will have an immediate impact on the growth of your business. And now, here's your host, marketing expert Doug Morneau.
Well, welcome back, listeners, to another episode of Real Marketing Real Fast. Today, I've got a guest joining me from across the waters. He's the closest major city would probably be London. I've got Tim Watson, and Tim operates a company called Zetasphere. We are connected through an international group called Only Influencers, and that group is the world's leading community for email marketing professionals. So Tim is a email marketing consultant who has over 14 years as a specialist in email marketing, experience working with blue chip brands, mainly in the US and the UK. In addition to strategic consulting services, Tim is also an email marketing trainer and frequently speaks at industry events. He's an active blogger, so you'll want to check out his website. And he doesn't just report on the trends, but he provides thought leadership on the opportunities and the challenges that we're currently facing in the industry. As well, he's a regular contributor to the DMA Email Council and Smart Insight blogs, as well as a guest blogger for other marketing sites. He is an elected member of the UK DMA Email Council, supporting the email marketing industries, and chairs Legal Best Practices Hub of the Email Council, authoring and reviewing DMA white papers and best practices. Tim spends 100% of his time focused on email with over 12 years experience in email marketing, and he's very knowledgeable. And I'd like to welcome Tim to the Real Marketing Real Fast podcast today.
Hey, Doug. Thanks very much for the intro.
So we both share a similar passion and obviously a similar group. We're excited about email. And so let's get into it. So do you want to share with our listeners a tactic or a major success or something that you found has worked really well for yourself and or your clients using email?
Yeah, sure. They happen obviously on an ongoing basis, but just recently an interesting one, and it's a simple tactic, and this was for in a B2B client in this particular case, and I cover a lot of B2B and B2C, and they had been putting out some emails. They hadn't really had a great deal of response from them to some of their prospect base, and they came to me and I had a look at what they were doing and rejigged the campaigns. Relatively simple, actually. Most of it was switching the emails from being a kind of like an advertising graphical flyer and changing it into a plain text personal outreach type email with some really nice engaging copy. And what went from virtually zero response was to a 5% reply rate on the campaign. So they were extremely happy with that, needless to say. And it's playing to the strength of email as being a communication mechanism between people, rather than just having something which looks like a graphical flyer and people go, what's this, and ignore it.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because there's always that conflict. I was working on a campaign for a client, and he said, well, where's all the images and where's all the branding? And we had taken exactly the same approach. We said, well, this, you were communicating with your audience, and they didn't sign up to receive a flyer. They signed up to receive information. And we put it in a more personal style and got a way higher open rate as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, if you've got products, you're going to need some images, very likely. If you're a fashion brand, you're definitely going to use images a lot of the time. But it depends what you're doing and why people are there. How they joined your list, what their background is, what your relationship with them at that point in time is, and in the early part of the relationship or even on lapsing, a more kind of one-to-one communication can really cut through where the advertising style or the brochureware email just doesn't reach. And, you know, in this one, the client was a little bit surprised, you know, when they saw what I was recommending. They, you know, they came thinking I was going to produce some fantastic creative campaigns, you know, as in pictures and beautiful and artwork. And I, you know, just went straight down the road of engaging copy that, you know, brings people through with a set of drawing through the copy, you know, one line at a time, with a bit of tease along the way. And, you know, they went with it, thankfully, rather than saying, oh, no, that's not what we wanted. We wanted a pretty picture. They went with it and that's trusted funny. Me and so on. But you get, I mean, I have had, you know, you sometimes get pushback from people if it's not what they expected. they go, no, couldn't we have some images in there?
Well, and I guess that's why we test stuff, right? I mean, the most good marketers know to test. And so you test both ways. And then at the end of the day, you look at the conversions and you let the conversions guide your next move.
Sure. If you can test, that's great. And that sort of brings on to a different topic around testing, which talk about major successes. I mean, another recent one was actually testing an image that was a graphical email. There was good reasons why it was graphical. And we tested a hero image in it, and one of them produced a 6% uplift compared to the other on the hero image, which was pretty nice. But the thing that I see with testing, that where many people go wrong, is they test with small sample sizes. You know, they'll send out 500 emails of one and 500 another, and then see that one's got a X percent, you know, click rate or open rate difference. And they'll assume that that's then the winner and continue. But on 500 sample size, it's very hard to get any statistical significance. So your results are just random. And you then go for the next few years believing in something that wasn't true.
That's funny. Well, I believe in ongoing testing. So my theory is we have a baseline that we use, but we're always testing to see if we can, like 6% is a big bump. If you've got a sizable email list, that's a huge increase on ROI. I mean, I'm sure if you were to go down HSBC and open up a pound sterling account and they said they give you an extra 6%, people would line up like around the city.
Oh yeah. I mean, these are, you know, when you can do the tests and when you've got the data to do it and it takes some energy, you know, yes, there's definitely, you know, value to be had from that. But you've got to be prepared to have the failures as well. And sadly, everybody talks about the successes in the test world and you see all these lovely case studies published. But I'm going to have to level up and be honest here. I've had some failures as well. You know, in fact, you know, I kind of reckon rule of thumb for one really good success, you're probably going to have to do 9 tests that really were not that exciting, where you had a great hypothesis. You thought this was really going to do something. You were, you know, convinced as to what was going on. You change it and then it's kind of a bit of a damp squib and you go, that was disappointing. But that's why we test, because, you know, we believe in something and then we're shocked when we find out we were wrong. We learn and go forwards. But, you know, you have to do the hidden ingredient with testing is a little bit to do a quantity of it. You know, one A-B subject line split per test per month is never going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, fair enough. So in terms of testing, I mean, what you're saying sample size. So maybe just talk about sample size. What do you, is there any rule of thumb that you would use with a client or that you'd recommend people to get enough data to make a decision?
Yeah, so it depends what you're going to measure as your parameter. You mentioned conversions. Obviously, it's great when you can measure conversions and, you know, true sales and decide your winner based on the total funnel journey, you know, the click through to the email to the conversion on a page and measure that. That's actually really hard to do because you need huge sample sizes for that. So to give you an idea, for a test involving looking at open rate, you're probably going to need somewhere between 3,000 to 8,000 people in each test cell to get a really nice result on a change in open rate. You know, click rate, a little bit more. You know, 10,000 people in a test cell. If you want to look at conversion rates right through the funnel, looking at e-commerce conversion, I've used test cells as big as 100,000. You know, I've been lucky to work with a lot of very large databases where you've got that kind of data that you can use. So it depends on what you're measuring as to how big the sample size needs to be. And in most cases, you're probably going to go on click rates as a reasonable compromise and look at that. You are, for rule of thumb, there is kind of a simple rule of thumb I look at, and it's certainly on open rates and click rates. If you see a difference of about 50 in your results, then you may well have statistical significance. So, for example, if I see one email got 630 clicks and the other got 680 clicks, that's a difference of 50. And as it works out in the stats, you know, that probably is going to have statistical significance. So if you look at results, I mean, when I'm looking at case studies and what people are publishing, I have a quick look to see, is there a difference of 50? If there isn't, you know, I might resort to an online calculator and get a really accurate measure. And if there's a difference of, you know, much more than 50, I go, oh yeah, their results are solid. They've obviously checked them out.
So where do you think the low-hanging fruit is here? So for our audience that's listening and they're saying, okay, you know, I've got a database and I'm managing it in whatever ESP. I'm sending a weekly newsletter. Hopefully they're sending at least weekly with some information. Where do you think the first place is that they should look if they're going to look at improving the results and testing?
So you could test lots of things. I mean, the important things in, you know, the things that make a difference are the offer. You know, that's going to make a big difference. You know, subject lines, great, test them, and calls to action and so on, test those formats. But the offer probably has the bigger difference. You know, should you offer a, 20% off? Should you offer $50? Should you offer, you know, some other benefit of some sort? So offers can have quite a big impact. And so test those.
That's an interesting approach. I'll take that into consideration next time, because I've always started with the subject line, figuring, you know, I need to get them open first. But maybe a different approach is, you know, use the same subject line, determine right up front what your biggest response for your offer is going to be. So at least you get some cash in the door while you're testing other elements.
And you know, kind of ask, you know, what else to test? I mean, frequency, you mentioned at least once a week, obviously highly, you know, brand specific and you know, what it is you're talking to people about and why, but frequency of course has a huge impact on results. You know, should you be sending once a week or three times a week or kind of once a month? Probably not in most cases, but you know, doing any sort of testing around frequency and is one of the biggest quick wins.
Now, what do you find in terms of you brought up frequency. So I've got my ideas on frequency, and my kind of thinking and belief is if you're mailing once a month, that people will often forget about you. They forget that they subscribed, and they don't understand the rules that you and I have to live by. If they forgot the unsubscribed, or they just don't want our email anymore, instead of unsubscribing, they might mark it as spam. Someone needs to educate our openers to not do that. It's bad for us. But what would you recommend for frequency? Or is there any rule of thumb? What do you find is working best today with your clients?
Yeah, it's so hugely context specific, isn't it? You know, if you take, again, you know, fashion, something like that, then you're going to be finding, you know, three times a week is a really good number. You know, I have a client who put out an email every day. And actually part of it's not a deals company, it's something else, but part of the promise when people sign up is you're going to get an email every day. So, you know, no big surprise, the right frequency is one a day.
It's daily, yeah.
Because that's what that's what you agreed and that's what you signed up for. You set that expectation. If you're kind of if you were doing something insurance or perhaps a B2B service company, then you might struggle to do more than one a week. You know, you may have to be looking at two a month. I agree totally. You want to make sure you don't get forgotten. But it's how good can you be at putting something in your emails often enough that makes people appreciate them and stay there. And, you know, if you can make your emails so interesting that people can't get enough of them, then, you know, that's like great because you can send a lot more. So it's, you know, it's that balance, isn't it, between making them interesting and useful and helpful, you know, valuable in some way, that allows you to, gives you permission to keep coming to the inbox as often as possible.
Well, and I love that. I think that's a really great point. And, you know, I'm really happy to hear you talk about like the different industries, because, you know, lots of times you'll talk to people and they have a definitive answer. Oh, you should only send once a week or every other week and so to your point, so your fashion guys are saying, hey, three times a week works because there's lots of information. Or if you have a daily newsletter, people are going to expect to get it daily. So daily is not too much. Now, if they start sending it twice a day, that might be a problem. But yeah, so whatever your commitment is, if people have signed up and you've told them in advance, this is what you can expect from me. My commitment is, you know, when I started my podcast, for example, I said, I'm going to publish twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Right.
And 99% of the time I hit that goal, but that's their expectation. So it would be kind of crazy if they said, hey, you're publishing too much. It's like, well, I said I was going to publish twice a week. So fair enough. If I'm going to publish three times a week, again, the industry dependent. And I love your point of what can you send people that they just can't wait to get your email, which means adding value to their life and not necessarily sending them more ads.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if people know that there's something going to come along sometime soon that they're going to appreciate having received, then they're quite happy to ignore a few emails in between that weren't the ones that they were interested in, because, you know, it just wasn't their thing at the moment. I mean, your podcast emails, you know, there's lots of great content going out on these podcasts. You know, possibly some topics are less interesting to some people than others, and they'll probably happily go, oh, yeah, you know, that podcast, nah, that's probably not me so much. I'll let that one go past my eyes. But I know that, you know, in a couple of days' time, there's going to be another one that could be the thing that I'm looking for. So, yeah, there's a balancing there as well. You know, you're happy to ignore a little bit of email if you get some good stuff that you every now and then.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a great point. Mm-hmm. So I want to switch gears just a little bit, because sure. I did do a little bit of digging on your background and kind of some of the services and the stuff that you offer and how you help your clients. And one thing we haven't talked about so far in the podcast, we've done a lot of discussion around email and deliverability and all those other issues, but you help people look for and determine what email service provider to use. Do you want to share just a little bit about how that works and you know, why somebody would use that as a service?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's, you know, I'll be straight. I mean, it's something that I don't do as often as the more the strategy, because people don't change their service provider too often. In fact, you don't really want to be changing them more than every, well, preferably no more than every 2 years, and ideally no more than every 5 years, because it's such a painful process. So, but, you know, when I do go through this process, as I do from time to time with people, they're looking for someone, you know, who's got a wider experience. You know, very often people who've worked, you know, in a company, they've worked with one provider and they feel the grass is greener elsewhere, but they don't really know because they've never worked with a different provider. And so I think that's one angle. And another is there's, you know, hundreds, I think, you know, 300-400 different email platforms around. There's the big names everybody knows, but if you look at it, there's lots of platforms, and, you know, trying to find the right match is, you know, quite a painful process. So, you know, people are looking for some guidance as to the things to that they can use to focus on quickly.
Well, how would you recommend somebody start? And the reason I'm asking is I'm probably not unlike yourself. I'm on a lot of different online forums, and I'm not going to name a bunch of different brands, but I'll often see discussion and people weighing in and lobbying for the brand that they're using. Mm-hmm. And I wonder sometimes you just need to start. Pick something. It might be the wrong thing, but get started. Don't spend 6 months or a year analyzing what is the best ESP, but get something and start collecting some data. So if somebody's looking for, maybe they're using a smaller free version, or they're using a small solution, they need to move up to a mid-size or bigger solution, how would you recommend they start that process?
Oh, yeah, okay. So this is the particular scenario here you're saying is someone who's just going to get started with email.
They're either going to get started or they're going to move up. They've maybe started with something simple. So maybe they've started with something like MailChimp and then they want to get into more of a CRM solution. What would you suggest would be the kind mm-hmm. of next steps for them to walk down that road?
Sure. So, I mean, as you say, if you're kind of not heavily invested at the moment and you haven't got a complex setup, then totally probably the best way is, you know, jump in and get started and you know, cut your teeth and learn a few lessons. You're probably not going to go far wrong if you pick a, you know, well-known platform, you know, as you say, a MailChimp or something like that. If you're looking to, you know, go a bit further and make the next step, then the right process to follow is be really, really, really clear with yourself about why. You know, exactly what is it you want to get out of that? What is the strategy that you're trying to deliver that your platform doesn't let you do? And I think that's, you know, a lot of people kind of, they've been using a platform for a while and they go, oh, you know, I think there must be something better. You know, I've been using this for the last couple of years and, you know, somehow it doesn't feel right for me. I'll have a look to see what hot things are out there. And then they'll go and sort of allow themselves to be wowed by the vendors who, you know, who say amazing things and promise amazing things. And, you know, and very often they do amazing things, but, you know, they'll talk about, and of course you'll be able to, you know, segment this and integrate that. And when, you know, when you stand up on one leg and it's raining and so on, then this magic will happen here. And it's very easy to get very excited with all these shiny features. And think this is a platform, this has got the most shiny bits, without first working out, you know, are those the things that are holding your business back? You know, how will you actually use these things in practice? So it's almost, there's this a tendency to buy technology and then work out a strategy to fit the technology rather than the other way around. Yeah. So if you feel your platform's limiting you, you know, first try and, you know, by all means, have a look what's in the market to get a sense of what's out there, but be so clear with yourself about what it is you want to do, and not in general terms. You know, try and make it really specific, especially if it's automation related, because those scenarios are quite complex. And you can, you know, find that the key thing you need is not available. So you need to work out point by point the steps that your automation is going to do, all the data that it needs to have available to it to make it work. And then once you've kind of got a really clear idea, then look for a platform that's going to perform that for you.
I was hoping you were going to go there. That's kind of my guidance is, you know, come up with a requirements document. What are all the things that you need to have? And then put the nice to have things later. Because I know that I fall into this trap all the time. I love technology and I love new stuff. And often I find myself with a new program dreaming about new things I could do when I've forgotten about the basic business stuff, which is, you know, kind of make the cash register ring. Yeah. We're looking at all these, oh, wow, I can do this. And oh, wow, I can do that. And then the other thing, I guess, is to look at what you've already got. So what tools and are you using? Are they going to play nice together?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you're probably not going to be changing your whole world. So, what is it that you've got that you've got to make it work with? And will it work? You know, there's an interesting difference between you know, talking to someone and a vendor will say, yes, we can do that. There's a subtle difference between yes, we can do that. And actually, it's about 3 days of effort plus some custom services. Or yes, we can do that. You'll just need to go over here, click these things, and you'll be done in quarter of an hour. And the difference is right. One of, you know, scenario A never happens because there's never enough effort to do it at enough time. You know, scenario P does happen. So the ease of being able to do the things that you want to do is actually pretty pivotal. I mean, I've, you know, worked in enough environments where, you know, in theory, you'd be able to try a new initiative on the email program. But in practice, because of the amount of resource that's going to be required to get it done, it never gets to the top of the priority list.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, I get that. And well, it's just interesting. I have never had a guest on or spoken to someone who actually walks people through the process. And like you said, there's a lot of good choices out there. And necessarily, it doesn't have to be the biggest, the best, the most expensive. It just needs to meet the needs of your business. Like you said, what's preventing you from growing your business and taking that next step? So do you want to share with us a little bit about what are you most excited about today as it relates to our industry?
So I think the fact that despite the many people who keep saying that you know, email's not going to survive, it keeps going and going and going. And, you know, I just quietly smile when people look at me and say, email, you know, isn't that dying? And I'm going like, I'm not seeing it. You know, it's you know, there's plenty of new MarTech entrance into the area. You know, there's people investing in it from the vendor side. You know, the email programs that you know, that I work with, you know, there doesn't seem to be any slowdown in those. And the thing that it excites me, you know, is the fact that, you know, whilst I was knocking technology a little bit, you know, there is a lot of tech that's there which is making things possible now, which, you know, 5 years ago were really hard to do. It's bringing down the cost point, you know, with a lot more of the sort of you know, predictive technologies, heaven's sake, shall I say the AI word, you know, the artificial intelligence yeah. side of things. Interesting enough, everybody used to be in predictive analytics about 2 years ago, but all of those people now claim they're in artificial intelligence.
Well, and the other half of the world claims to be in blockchain or Bitcoin.
Blockchain, Bitcoin, yeah, that's right, yeah. See. Blockchain, yeah, what can we use that for? What about artificial intelligence too? But no, but I mean, seriously, you know, there is some good stuff going on despite all the hype and, you know, and a lot of it is there's hype and froth around all of these things. But, you know, being able to do relevant communication, automate things at scale in terms of content and deliver better experiences, you know, that's great. And that's keeping us moving. You know, that's definitely an exciting area.
Well, I tend to agree. Like you said, the marketplace is changing, technology is getting better. And I guess the one thing that's kind of interesting is that if you're right, I hear the naysayers as well. I'm just about to release a book on email marketing, and it's called Three Big Lies. And one of the lies is that email is dead, it doesn't work, and it's illegal. And so I thought, well, why don't I just start with the three things that people complain about the most? Why don't we get those out of the way? And then we can work on and talk about, you know, the reality. And, you know, you didn't have to look very far online, and still even today in the news, to see what's happening with our social media friends at Facebook and the outrage. And I'm going, hey, so what would you rather have? Would you rather have a business page on Facebook, or would you rather have an email list of, say, 10,000? So 10,000 likes of your business page or 10,000 people in your database. Well, for me, it's a no-brainer. I would rather have the database.
Certainly Facebook has done emails a lot of favors, you know, from the early days of, you know, come on in and build your audience on our platform, and the, you know, the bait and switch to, oh, and now pay to reach them, which was like, hey, Facebook, that's great. You've really done the email marketing industry a big favor there, because everybody's realized that they've built their property on someone else's borrowed turf, and actually building your own property is a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree. I think these days and moving forward, I want to own the platform where my clients are. So if my clients are going to communicate with me through direct mail or through email or online, I want to make sure that I can access those and not have someone else say, you know, I know this is how we started out, but we're changing our use of terms now because, you know, I really don't like your ads anymore, so we can't advertise to them.
Yeah. And the reason, you know, why email is so great, isn't it? It's because it's an open standard, you know, it's not owned by anybody, you know, whereas just about everything else, they're somehow owned by someone.
And just one quick note, just as a point of interest for you, people talk about opens and open rates and deliverability and all those wonderful things that are things that we deal with every day in email. I recently just took on a new project, a new client, and they had some data they hadn't sent to for a long time. So we sent it out, we cleaned the data. So it was clean, but it was their original database. They just hadn't communicated with these guys for over a year. We had a 48% open rate on the email.
Yeah, wow.
So that's still, in my books, pretty darn acceptable to make sure see that half your audience saw it. I know that typically when I post on social media, half my audience does not see my tweet, my Instagram post, or my LinkedIn post.
Yeah, absolutely not. No, and also it's gone. It's there today, gone tomorrow, or gone in about half an hour. I mean, I was just doing looking through some reporting for a client to catch up with on a monthly basis, and caught up with them early in the week, and I said, oh, by the way, kind of curious, but you know, this is what we've got on the some of the abandoned win backs and so on from a sign up process. But whilst I was going through that, I noticed that there was one abandoned win back came from something from May 2017. You know, what a message from May 2017. They must have gone back through now and gone and you know, and gone through and executed and completed conversion. I don't think you'd get that on a social post that something's, you know, they'd obviously kept it in their inbox or kept it in their email. You know, Gmail's fantastic, isn't it? You can, you know, keep everything you've ever had. You can search. They must have kept something somewhere. They probably hit a search. They went, oh yeah, actually, I need those guys now. You know, they hit a search, found it, clicked through, and, you know, that's the sort of the persistence of those email messages. They don't disappear half an hour less later.
Yeah, I think you brought up a valid point. I mean, I look at my own email, and obviously I have a number of different email addresses for things I'm doing, and I often file stuff for future reference. I'm thinking, well, I don't need to bookmark the page. I can just file that. And then I know that with Gmail's advanced search tool, I can go search for that topic. So I could go into my email right now and search for email deliverability and have a whole slew of stuff come up from people like you that I follow in the DMA and the EEC. That would be all around that topic. So it's my own mini search engine where I've accumulated relevant stuff from people I like and trust.
Sure. And it's your own curated source, isn't it? You know, as you say, it's people you know, like, and trust. So it's not like going to the search engine where you've then got to filter through all of the stuff, which, you know, is maybe not from a source that you're willing to believe in. I mean, sadly, there's a lot of, you know, misinformation on the web as well. You know, things like, don't put free in the subject line, it's a spam trigger word, which is just like such a myth, it's untrue. But it still goes round and round and round, and there'll be a blog post sometime in the next month with that. So, you know, it's a curated source of information in your inbox. It's more powerful than, you know, it's kind of, you're going to trust it so much more and be willing to go to it.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, you know, I said, they're like my friends. These are people I like and follow. So, I can read it and I can file it, and I know that it'll safely be there 6 months from now. And I'm saying, hey, I'm looking for that information on that new AI app that's going into email, and I can dig it up and off we go.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, their conversions come through. I mean, as I say, you know, it was quite funny. I was looking, you know, going through the data, like, hang on, what happened there? Well, that's May 2017 and they've come through and converted. Okay.
Oh, that's free. That was a good one. So who's one guest that you think I should have on my podcast?
Well, there's so many good people around. And actually, I don't know if you've already had them. There we go. Have you had Chad White on? He's a great guy.
I have not. I should reach out to Chad. I did read his book. I did give him a nice 5-star endorsement on Amazon. So I should phone him up and say, hey, you should get on the podcast and share about all the smart stuff you're doing, you guys, yourself and over at Litmus.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's the research director over at Litmus now. And he's a kind of a quiet strength because, there's a lot of people who are quite shouty and, you know, very visible in the industry. But Chad just quietly gets on with stuff and reliably comes up with interesting things, but he doesn't make a great deal of noise about it in the process. But, yeah.
Well, I think his book is probably the most thorough book I've read on email marketing to date.
Right.
So it covered the whole gamut.
Uh-huh.
So, what's the best place to find you, Tim? So if people want to hunt you down and find out and say, hey, I want to connect with this guy and learn more about him or what he's doing, or I need some help, where can people track you down online?
Sure. Well, if they hop over to zetasphere.com, they'll certainly find me there. And there's a link on there for my LinkedIn page that people can find me on LinkedIn. So if you search Tim Watson on LinkedIn, Tim Watson Marketing, you'll probably find me. If you search Tim Watson email marketing on Google, that will find me. Or yes, I'll go to zetasphere.com. That's zetasphere.com.
Well, excellent. Well, I really appreciate you taking time of your day today and sharing with us. It's always a pleasure to talk to people, especially people who agree with me that email is good. It makes my day more and more exciting.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to have had the opportunity, Doug.
Well, thanks so much, listeners. We're going to wrap up. That's another episode of Real Marketing Real Fast. I had with me today Tim Watson joining me as usual. We'll make sure that all of this conversation is transcribed for those of you who like to read it. And for those of you who don't, we'll just use it to take advantage of the search engines. We'll make sure that Tim's information is there, all the links to his website, his blog, and his LinkedIn profile. So tune back in, make sure you are subscribed to our email list, and make sure that you are subscribed to listen to us on iTunes. So thanks so much, and we'll catch up to you on the next episode.
That's all for this episode of Real Marketing Real Fast. Now it's time to take your marketing to the next level by visiting DougMorneau.com and downloading our advanced marketing white papers, as well as exclusive resources based on today's episode. That's DougMorneau.com. Until next time, we look forward to serving you right here on Real Marketing Real Fast.